We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
It's your True Faith Newcastle United podcast. Eddie Howe's first game, although in true Newcastle United fashion, he wasn't actually there to witness the match in the stands like Norman Reilly. He viewed it from afar, and I've got Norman, Kyle, Mickey here with me today to talk through this match, what happened, why it happened, and what happens next to Newcastle United. First of all, the usual message from me. We're on Patreon, £5.50 a month for lots more of this kind of stuff. If you like this show, if you want to keep it going, if you like it being free of charge, please support us on there. You get all of these podcasts ad-free on our Patreon platform as well, so none of the American stuff at random intervals. Normally, I'm going to start with you. Me, Kyle, and Mickey were at the match, so I'm particularly interested in your point of view as someone who consumed it from afar. I think the general consensus between people that I speak to and know and what I've seen on social media is much improved performance in parts, but a very bad result. What do you think of that, mate?
The result looks worse now because of other results from yesterday, right? Watford winning convincingly against Man United. Burnley picking up a point at home at Crystal Palace, and Burnley on a little bit of decent form at the minute. They drew with Chelsea the other week. Beat Brentford 3-1 there. So Burnley beat Brentford quite comfortably a couple of weeks ago. And obviously Norwich bringing in Smith, winning. Now Norwich have got 8 points on the last 5 games. So us drawing yet another game, it being my 12th game, in context it looks very worrying. However, what I will say is the performance itself gave me loads of optimism. The fact that we had 23 shots on goal and 9 of those on target, which is more than the sum total of the last 5 games put together. And it's obviously the most amount of shots we've had on target this season, 2 more than Watford away. And that was at a point where Watford were absolutely dreadful just before they sacked Cisco and Munoz. In fact, they sacked them because they drew to him with Steve Bruce's Newcastle. The expected goals return yesterday of 1.8. Prior to yesterday, the season's average was 0.89. So that is another reason to be optimistic, I think. From a goal-scoring perspective, that's the first time we've scored 3 at home in front of fans since Southampton in the April 2019 under Rafa, which is pretty spectacular. Obviously, 3 goals were scored during lockdown football on, I think, several occasions. But yeah, in terms of in front of a crowd, that's the first time. Other little aspect to the game, you know, the amount of players that pushed forward when we attacked. So instead of it being either ASM or Wilson or a combination of the two in the box, or maybe Joe Willock arriving from Norway alongside 7 of the opposition's defenders, we had like 6 or 7 players in the box at one time, pretty much every time we got the ball forward, which already suggests that not only is there more attacking intent, but there's also a higher level of fitness. Within 2 weeks, the players looked, to me, fitter. And I'd say that the substitutions as well. Interestingly, Craig Hope said in-game management needs to be worked on, and the performance was a bit chaotic yesterday, which, you know, I've no reason to disagree with that. However, what I will say is that those substitutions, the fact that we scored because of them, the phrase across the change in formation, that to me is evidence of in-game management that we probably didn't see particularly regularly under Steve Bruce. So I think despite the fact that it's a draw, despite the fact that we still need another win, the positives that I'm taking from that game mean that I'm going to Arsenal on Saturday with many reasons to be optimistic. And I'm talking about fully believing that we can go to Arsenal and get something, despite obviously the defensive haphazardness that we'll no doubt get into. But overall, I'm coming away from that with very positive feelings.
I agree with you, Norman. What we really could have done with is these games, this game and the Arsenal game, to have been the other way around, because we can come out of an Arsenal game with a good performance and not a positive result much more enthused than we can the other way. Like this, for me yesterday, the result was absolutely paramount. And I went into the game saying, I almost don't care how we play. Like, those changes can come, but the change that needs to happen immediately is the result. So I was a bit disappointed that's the way around that it was. And I think if it was the other way around, I think if we played Arsenal away yesterday, we would have still played well. It would have still been a massively improved performance. So we could have come out of it regardless of the result and got into that Brentford game at home and we would have won. I'm absolutely sure about it. So it's just, I feel like we're a little bit unfortunate the way those fixtures have panned out.
Kyle, Norman's saying there that the kind of other results yesterday have taken the shine off this. I think there is, you know, and some of the responses to me in social media, and I've been very positive about this, and you've been very positive about this, Cam. We're going to come into that positivity later on. I promise the listener there are good things coming. Is it simple enough to say, though, Brentford at home, no wins in 11, you've got to win?
It is easy to say that, but to quote Steve Bruce, there was actually plenty of positives yesterday. There really was. We got forward, and it's going to take a long time. It is going to take a couple of months to unwind the last couple of years under Steve Bruce, because we've been, like, I'm sure half the players don't know what tactics are at this point, and they've kind of been shown the ropes a little bit, and there's a lot to take from that. I know defensively we're abysmal at times, but going forward it was a breath of fresh air. Norm was touching on it before. He thinks we can go to Arsenal and get something, but we're bottom of the table. I don't think we're bottom at any point under Steve Bruce. But I've never heard a fan say we can go somewhere next week and get a result, because it's usually, well, you know, we can get, hopefully we can roll our sleeves up and we might shithouse a result. But it's just having that hope back again. We didn't win, no, but there's a lot to be a positive about, and just hearing hope from Norman, there's something extra to come on to that. There's progression to be made, a work in progress, to quote Steve once again.
Steve, Steve Bruce, the philosopher. Wow. It is interesting because, you know, again, the other results really worked against us yesterday, right? I mean, you could even look at Aston Villa bringing in your manager. So yeah, we're in this position, this unique position, really, where Ranieri's coming a few weeks ago. So you could argue that Watford are perhaps getting a bit of a bounce from that, despite the fact they've lost a couple of games. You know, he's won two games and they've scored 5 goals and 4 goals. Are we at Everton at home to Man U? I mean, you know, there's clearly something happening there. Gerrard coming in and Smith going to Norwich, so Farke out and a new manager in. It's a unique position that we're in, right? And I look at that game yesterday and you think, right, as haphazard as I say, as we looked at the back, two of the goals, one of them was a clear goalkeeping error. You could argue that Tony shouldn't have been allowed to get his shot off. Okay, but, you know, that's what centre-forwards do, right? They find space to get shots off at times, and it slips through Darlow's arms. And the equalising goal, the goal to put them 3-2 up, I mean, that deflection was, I mean, that was up there with kind of the 50 goals that Frank Lampard scored, with the biggest deflections you've ever seen in your entire life. It was huge. they're just really, really, two very unfortunate situations that have allowed them to score twice. And on another day, Callum Wilson has two half-decent chances that he buries. I mean, Ivan Toney being on that position on the line where he was right then, you know, again, these are kind of infinitesimally small, minute differences that have ultimately impacted on the results. So again, yes, in context, because of the results, it's a hard one to stomach. But I've come away from that again, and I wasn't there, right? So I'm only basing it on what I've read, what I've watched them through, you know, a TV screen. But ultimately, as I've said, and as Kyle's reinforced, I'm really excited about going to Arsenal next week, because all of a sudden, I'm looking at a Newcastle team and thinking, we can score goals, man. We can score goals. And you know what goals bring? Goals bring points, right?
Accumulation of points, isn't it?
Luke Edwards is foaming, by the way. We've mentioned Steve Bruce about 5 times so far.
Yeah, turned off.
I just miss. I miss him so much. As I say, it's like Stockholm syndrome, Steve Bruce syndrome.
Football's a game of small margins, isn't it? And bad teams get bad luck. That's just how football works. It always has been, and we need to turn the tide of that, and we will. But that's what happened was yesterday. You know, you're right to highlight those two goals. What I wanted to say, though, in terms of the context of the game, is how many times, looking around the room for answers, by the way, how many times in the last 3 years have we come away from a game thinking we got less than we deserved?
Oh yeah,
like handful, if any.
I made that point to several people yesterday after the match, that it was this. There's a lot of weird things happening yesterday, things that I've not seen in a football pitch in a long time, which we'll come on to later. But Newcastle have always gone into games on the other end of those results.
Yeah.
So Newcastle had all of the shots, had a lot of the territory. Brentford played a really good counter-attacking game, but they did play a counter-attacking game. You know, all of the chances, really, apart from one goal, which was disallowed for them. You could argue they hit the post in the first phase, so that was a chance. But apart from that, Darlow's not made a save yesterday. Like, who conceded three and not made a save. I'm going to talk about him in a second. But you are right. And this is what I talked about on a few Patreon shows through the week. I knew there would be an improvement, a vast improvement. It's impossible not for there to be an improvement, considering the regime from before, and also the fact that Howard's coaching staff seem to know what they're doing. But we've left ourselves in that position that we can't afford any bad luck, we can't afford any drop points. We will play badly this season. We will deservedly get beaten some games. No, that's going to happen, we'll deal with it. What we have to do, and what teams at the bottom have to do, is pick up the points in the games you play well in. And that's what reminds me of the previous relegation sides that I've seen.
Yeah.
Especially at home.
How many games in 15-16? Stoke, Everton in 15-16 dominated those two games. Villa dominated that game. What, 2 points from nine?
Yeah.
And that is the difference between staying and going down.
Yeah.
I just really want to touch on Carl Darlow. Let's talk about the team sheet before we move on to part two of the show. Team sheet, one of the most exciting team sheets in years. I'm lucky that I got a little text off someone in the know about an hour before the match who told us the team sheet, and I thought, fuck me. That's a lot of attacking players, and also, fuck me, five at the back. Yeah. It wasn't five at the back, though. It was three at the back with genuine wing-backs, and it was completely different. I don't know. Kyle, I'll come to you, mate. Okay. Let's not even talk about initial thoughts. Did Eddie Howe get his first team selection right for you?
Well, he did say he was only going to tweak it. So I wasn't expecting, like, ground scale, like, massive changes as of yet. I was expecting him to play, like, a similar shape. I was happy to see the likes of Cher in. I was happy to see Jonjo in because he did speak highly about Jonjo before the match. There was players that could pass the ball forward and really implement what he tried to do, which was play out from the back yesterday. So I think he did get his team sheet right. He did get the formation right. But the two positions I'd probably question was probably the goalkeeper, which we'll probably touch on if his mistakes, but the other one being Jacob Murphy. I think the last 4 or 5 games, I think, were best defenders being Manquillo. He's been able to go forward, he's been able to defend well, and I think he's the best at being able to transition from attack to defence, whereas Murphy, I think, he's capable of a great delivery. He's very direct, but defensively shocking, as their third goal showed in the muddle-up with Shelby. But they're the only two I would really question. The rest of the team, I think, you got bang on, to be fair.
Yeah, I expected a five at the back, actually. I said it on the Matchday podcast yesterday. But I knew it would be a very different five at the back, and it was a very different five at the back. And the linchpin in that in that system being so different is the two central midfielders, because that was two central midfielders that were playing 25 yards ahead of the back three, not two central midfielders in Shelby and Hayden or Longstaff and Hayden that drop into the defensive line every single time we want the ball. And that just changes the shape of everything completely. And also, having five at the back and then only two in midfield with three forwards allows you to have a lot more width in the pitch. It was just completely different. And I said on the Matchday podcast yesterday, if it's going to be five at the back, I didn't want it to be. But if it is, I trust that Howe's got that decision right. And we're now back in a position where we, as a collective, know less about football than our manager.
Completely back the formation. In fact, I love the idea of 3-4-3. I really enjoyed the fact that what we saw yesterday was the potential of ASM, Wilson and Joe Linton. We'll obviously talk about Joe Linton, but that front three yesterday, from what I saw, it was reminiscent of the kind of latter days of Benitez, right? With the front three of Almirón, Perez and Rondon, the mobility that those players have. And ultimately, you could argue that Wilson is a better finish out, okay, he didn't score yesterday. But what I mean is that there's a great deal of potential in. Tyndall spoke about how much belief he has in us as an attacking entity. So either completely back the formation. The concern, obviously, and how he's limited by this, is the playing personnel he has. So you look at the three centre-halves yesterday, and if you're not playing with fullbacks or what Bruce used to play, which is really, really deep line wingbacks to the extent where they basically were fullbacks, I think you kind of need centre halves who've got an idea of how to play in fullback positions. Okay, you could argue Kieran Clarke's played left back before, but I don't think mentally he's a left back. Whereas obviously, let's say Dummett comes in that back three, and I think that would strengthen it straight away because of his ability to kind of read the game as a fullback and as a centre half. And it brings into the equation that, well, I think we desperately need a centre-half in the transfer window, in my opinion. The only other concern as well is obviously the attacking intent with Shelvey and Willock is brilliant. But at the same time, I think when we're in the position we are coming up against better sides, obviously, let's say, and even against Brentford, you could argue because Brentford got in the space between the centre-halves and those two midfielders, they really exploited that right, turning them way more kind of their movement. So I would like to see us go out and get a box-to-box midfield on the transfer window. And I look at how his time at Bournemouth, and ultimately you can see what he's doing there, right? He has Billing and Lerma, and both Billing and Lerma, you could argue, are able to transition from one box to the other quite quickly. They're players of high stamina and players who can create as well as defend. So, yeah, I really back the formation. And as I say, I just feel he was limited by the personnel, but hopefully that'll improve over the transfer window.
I agree. We're going to talk a lot more about the players in the second part of the show and performances. I agree with everything that's been said. I actually think both fullbacks were a massive issue. Let's talk about Carl Darlow before we talk about the defence in general, the second part of the show. You cannot win games of football in the Premier League with your keeper playing like that. It's almost impossible. I actually think Darlow is at fault for all three goals. First goal, don't need to say anything about that, goes straight through. Lack of concentration because we've just scored or he's not expecting the shot or whatever. The second goal, the lad heads the ball inside the six-yard box. Keeper's got to come and claim that. It's with Darlow, he's a reactive goalkeeper. He doesn't see situations before they happen. And there's two issues with the third goal. So the third goal, it's unlucky because it's a deflection, right? That player is trying to bend the ball into the part of the goal it actually goes into. So if Darlow just dives for it, I think he gets there despite the deflection because the ball's going wide. It's being given as an own goal to Jamal Lascelles. But it's almost like he needs to see the ball in front of him before he dives for it. And he's very good. He is good at those late reactions. But it's almost like that. If you look at Darlow's starting position, the ball ends up where you'd expect it to end up, even with the deflection, and he's not there. In fact, the ball has gone past him before he dives. So it's really weird. He kind of dives backwards for the ball. And again, it looks like a lack of concentration. I think Martin Dubravka says that. In addition, really quickly, just before, I don't know whether this made it on the match of the day, just before they scored the third goal, the ball was there to be claimed all day.
Yeah.
Between him and a Brentford forward. And he does this weird kind of slide tackle, which actually gets away with. We don't get the ball back, and 30 seconds later, the ball's in the net. I don't know why match of the day cut away between the two. So if he claims that ball, we don't concede that goal. I think Eddie Howe got loads of things right yesterday. I have to be honest, we've slated Bruce. We're trying to analyse things here. I think Howe's a great manager and the right man for the job, but I'll be honest, that was a bad call. That was a bad call yesterday. And I heard some people tweeted me saying, oh, he's been away in international break. Well, Fabian Scher was away in international break and he came straight in.
Yeah.
Martin Dubravka is Newcastle's best keeper by some distance. And I think as well with Darlow, he kind of saw a guy who, whether it was the first mistake, whether it's this theory that as soon as Dubravka comes back to full fitness, Darlow just goes a bit mentally because he knows that any mistake will see him out of the team. We had a free kick last minute of the game and Darlow took it and just kicked the ball straight out of play. Right at the end, and the whole on what was a really positive day for atmosphere, the whole stadium was just like, fuck's sake.
I've got 2 points on that. I agree with you there. It was the right idea what he did there with a quick free kick to try and get it in behind, yeah. But just don't kick it out. Like it's much better being 10 yards further inside than you want than kicking it out, because it just killed everything, and that was the game done.
Yeah,
definitely. I think you're incredibly harsh about the second goal. I really do. It's a cracking ball in.
I do as well, to be fair.
It's over him. I don't think he can get there. He does well to get in the way. The header from their absolutely tiny fullback, who should never win a header, by the way.
This is the thing. It's in the 6 yard box.
I know, but he's never going to be covering that part of the 6 yard box because it's so far beyond him and all of the rest of the play.
It was a great delivery, to be fair.
It was
brilliant delivery.
The person I blame for the second goal is Jacob Murphy.
Yeah.
Rico Henry was in a different postcode.
Don't worry, Kyle. There's plenty of blame to go around. We're just getting started.
It was terrible marking by Murphy, but I think Darlow's to blame for 1 and 3 for sure, but number two was a great delivery. In fact, it was a lot like Maximin's goal, very similar cross and a good finish by a winger.
Spot on in terms of the blame for the Henry goal. I mean, you look at Murphy and the fact that the ball was allowed to. The ball was allowed to be crossed with so much time, as good as a cross it was, the fact that Murphy wasn't marking, the fact that Darlow maybe should have done better. But ultimately, your point, Alex, on Darlow being a reactive keeper, I think is really important. If we're kind of set up as this front foot side who likes to kind of transition to attack very quickly. We need a proactive keeper, basically a keeper who can not only come and claim the ball, but can release it quickly and accurately. And unfortunately, Darlow, for me, isn't that goalkeeper. He's very much a on-the-line goalkeeper who will make saves in a side that is being peppered with shots regularly, which Newcastle United have been, obviously, for the last three or four seasons.
Nice one, lads. I think that'll do now for the Carl Darlow burning at the stake. we're going to move on now and talk about some positives in part two of the show.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Okay, lads, part two. Kyle, I'm going to come to you for this one, mate, as Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's been sacked live, even though we're not... This is go out live. So people listening to this already know, but we're just finding out now. Bad news for Newcastle, because we'll play them next month and would have much preferred him to be in charge. But anyway, Kyle, let's talk about positives, mate. Tell the listeners what you really enjoyed about yesterday.
Well, I don't know about everybody listening, but anybody like the new Brazilian winger that we've got, Joe Linton.
Canny debut, wasn't it?
40 million quid. Well worth it, aye. But he was brilliant, wasn't he? Like, he held up the ball. He looked in control of the ball, barring the time he fell down the box in the last couple of minutes. His passes were on point. His finish was brilliant. Like, I feel like I'm talking about a different footballer. Like, he was absolutely phenomenal. Like, it was his best performance in a Newcastle shirt, bar none. And I think, honestly, if Tyndall and Eddie Howe have worked with him for 10 days and they've got that out of him, and Steve Bruce is arguing in the press conference whether he's a centre forward or a left winger, like, it just shows how, like, poor he's been underdeveloped over the past couple of years. Because if that's the standard now for Joe Linton, if he can keep playing like that, we've got one hell of a player in Eddie Howe's system for sure. Like,
totally agree. You'll do well to find a bigger Joe Linton critic than me over the years. I've absolutely slaughtered him. Yesterday, he was, along with Alisson Maximin and Jonjo Shelvey, man of the match by some distance. What I really liked about him was, first of all, I think what's happened is he's been told what his role is in the team. You're going to play on the right of a three-man attack. And Steve Bruce never played a three-man attack. He either played a one or a two or a one and a one. And then if you were wide, you were almost like a wide winger having to do a lot of defensive
work.
Or a
fullback.
Joe Linton has come in. He's been played in his actual position, arguably for the first time. The first time he's been here. And in addition, right from the first minute, he was on it. He knew what his job was. And I think I want to talk about the overall tactical direction of the team after we talk about individuals. But I think the whole team selection yesterday was created to attack. And Eddie Howe has told Joe Linton, I just want you to move forwards with the ball. Don't want you to run backwards with it. I don't want you to find a centre-back. Obviously, there'll be situations where that arises. When you get the ball, drive. And we saw he can do that. He's comfortable with the ball at the feet. He's strong. He's powerful. His vision's good. Great goal. Brilliant goal to get it out of his feet. Hit it across the keeper right in the corner. Keeper's got no chance. And he was really, really good. What I also liked about him, and this was a bit of a surprise, and this might be my nice position I had yesterday, kind of in the director's box part, right on the halfway line. So I got a really good view of everything that happened compared to me seat in the corner where normally I'm like clearing spit off the back of my net most of the match. Izzy was a leader. He was telling other players what to do. I don't know if people noticed this, but if you look at the our third goal, which is essentially a brilliant 1-2 between St Maximin and Fraser, by the way, Jacob Murphy, Joe Linton's kind of going to go on the outside of Fraser when he gets the ball. And he looks at Murphy and he waves his arm at Murphy, get on the outside, get on the outside, to make that space to take the defender or a winger away from Fraser to whip that ball in, which is the ball of the season, by the way. That's leadership there. That's having the confidence in yourself to try and dictate what other players are doing. Joe Linton before yesterday, never in a million years.
I agree. What the main difference you saw in Joe Linton yesterday was confidence, and I haven't seen that from him at all, but it kind of explains why he's been getting a sniff, because he's been so poor on the pitch the whole time he's been here. He has to have been doing something remarkable in training that none of us thought he was capable of, and yesterday proves that he has got like serious talent as a footballer. He really does. What crushes me is he's going to be sitting at home today and thinking about how he fell over at the end. And that if he doesn't slip,
I don't know.
If he doesn't slip, we win the game.
This is a bloke who was talking about moving to a top six club like 3 weeks ago. Despite the performances, I reckon he takes the positives for me.
Well, I hope you're right. I really do, because he's made so much headway in like 85 minutes yesterday. He has just transformed the opinion of him on Tyneside. It really has. Like, he's come out of that game with more credit, other than Eddie Howe, he's come out of that game yesterday with more credit than anyone else. And it's remarkable, because nobody in the whole city would have picked him.
I totally agree. And in addition to that as well, like, he was even doing Brazilian things. Like, there was the halfway line, he had two players around him and he just put it on left to right and just ran with the ball. I'm like, what is this? Like, we've found a footballer. He's realised his nationality and just decided to split ankles with his running, but he was phenomenal yesterday. But like I said before, it's the standard now. That's what he's got to do. And even then, he never stopped running. He didn't drop his head off. Like, the amount of times he'd lose the ball and flail his arms up and be frustrated, that wasn't there yesterday. He literally just drove forward and he made himself known. And like the lead, I didn't know about the leadership part of the third goal yesterday for us, but confidence. I agree with you, mate. It's a wonderful thing to have, and I think literally Eddie Howe's put the arm over the shoulder, a bit like Bobby Robson did Alan Shearer a couple of years ago. You've got to go forward. You've got to show your confidence and get in the box. And I think Jordan could be a real asset under Howe. Like, I really hope he can turn a lot of people around, because he's been critiqued more than probably any other player in the last couple of years under Bruce. But hopefully it's a redemption story in waiting with Jordan. Like, but really happy to see what he's done.
Redemption story in waiting. What a lovely headline that is. What a lovely air way of putting it. Look, he was fantastic from what I saw. Maybe Howe just brought him in like a Portuguese translator instead of one from Austria, like the club did a couple of years ago. So he got proper instructions that he understood. No, he was excellent. I mean, look, a couple of moments for me really highlighted the clear switch in confidence that he's had. I think, first of all, Alex, you're spot on in, despite the fact that he missed that last-minute chance, I don't think that'll affect him. I think the fact that he scored well, the fact that he led the line, and the fact that Howe, Tindall et al. And his teammates are going to be really praising his performance will eradicate any kind of lingering pain that miss caused him at the death. And I think you'll go into the Arsenal game full of confidence. But a couple of things, So the corner that Lascelles scored from, if you look at it, right, initially it was a case of typical Joe Linton, typical as in what we've seen since he arrived, right? The ball was played up the line, he basically fell over, but he got up and he won the ball back and he won a corner from that. That straight away is somebody who's not letting it get to his head, that in the first sort of 15 minutes he's maybe made an error. He got straight up, bang, went straight back in, and that, I think that ties into the leadership aspect you mentioned there, Alex. He's trying to make things happen, right? And then, obviously, the goal itself was brilliant. I mean, brilliant finish. But for me, it was the celebration. You obviously wouldn't have seen the kind of the camera focus in the stadium, but the camera goes on to him, and it just looks... He looked like a man reborn. The determination and the joy in his face, it looked to me like somebody who who just thought, I'm in this, like I'm doing the business, yeah. And really couldn't be more pleased. I mean, again, like, you know, like most of the Newcastle fans have criticised him, and I don't think unjustifiably, because his performances have been bad, but obviously everything's, you know, everything has its reasons and its context, and he's been at Newcastle United for 2 years at a terrible club. So maybe we will see a player who can be extremely useful between now and the end of the season.
Definitely. We've got much to talk about in limited time, so we'll crack on. Kyle, going to come to you again, mate. I'll give you one of these two lads to talk about, Anderson Maximin or Jonjo Shelvey. Who do you want to talk about, mate?
I'll talk about Shelvey because, on social media and stuff and on my own podcast, I've slated Jonjo Shelvey for a good couple of years. I've called him lazy. He's passing, I thought, went down the bog in recent years. At times I thought he's just a proper shadow of himself. But yesterday, he was another one reborn. Just like it feels like they've been in a cocoon half of these players for a couple of years, and Eddie Howe just like chiselled the hammer and cracked the shell. Like that's what it feels like. And Shelvey, he completely controlled the midfield yesterday. He even looked fit. Like Jonjo Shelvey looking fit. Usually we're talking about how he looks like he smoked 40 like tabs in a day after one sprint, but he looked in the game all game, and he was phenomenal. Some of the passing, I was thinking this is a Jonjo Shelvey of the Championship, like trying to spray passes, trying to take the game by the scruff of the neck and being a key player in that midfield. And it's been a position that he's been needing to take by the scruff of the neck for some time. Better late than never, but he was absolutely phenomenal yesterday. Barring probably the third goal, where him and Murphy kind of just let the lad through. I thought it was his best performance probably since the Man City game 2-2 at home a couple of years ago. But he was absolutely brilliant. Like, I don't know what either of you, any of yous think, but yeah, I thought he was absolutely bang on.
What a transformation. I mean, what a transformation. There was one point in the second half where he was under a massive amount of pressure on the ball in our defensive right-back position, and he'd played this cross-field pass to put Maximin in behind that was just sensational. That's why you have someone like him in the team, and it's what he hasn't done for so long. It would have been worth carrying Jonjo Shelvey for the rest of the stuff that he normally doesn't do, just for that kind of pass. And there wasn't the only one. There was a number of them. But he did everything else as well. It was the most un-Jonjo Shelvey-like performance I've ever seen from him at the central midfielder. Like, it was remarkable. I would, like, you know, we're talking about Joe Linton with the transition. That's the most unexpected performance for me in the game yesterday was Jonjo Shelvey. I thought he was sensational.
Yes, yeah, I have to echo that. There was a point in the first half where Murphy had the ball from a throw-in, and Shelvey sprinted like 30 yards to come get the ball from the throw-in, which is like, again,
unnoted.
Things I thought I'd never see. Like, but again, I think there's a leadership aspect to that. I think he has been empowered by Howe and the coaching staff to say, you are our central midfield. The lads beside you might change. As long as you maintain your performance and do all these things we want, you're always going to get a game. Jonjo Shelvey at Swansea and at Liverpool and at Charlton was like the talent in his position in this country. And it's a bit like Joe Linton as well. And this is what I mean the wider fan base and us in this podcast have always said. There's so much talent in this squad, it just hasn't been utilised properly. And to move it on to Alan Saint-Maximin, like, best performance of the season for me. Brilliant goal. Where did he play? Left.
In his position. Who would have thought?
In his position, where he actually plays. Like, so frustrating that for so many games this season he's been played through the middle and not had the ball. Look at the passage of play for the Joe Linton goal. Like, yeah, there's a bit of luck. But you it's not luck when you've like gone past two men like they're not there, cutting in on your wrong foot, shooting on your wrong foot, and if you hammer the ball into the box at speed, there's a chance it might go in, it might go at the goal, it might ricochet, and we've got the ricochet, and we've got the goal. So I mean, I thought Maximin's brilliant. I mean, the finish for the goal, by the way, to like you kind of argue he's taking it with his wrong foot. You expect him to take it with his right and hit it across the keeper, but he backs himself to hit it first time lower to the ground. So there's less power potentially with his left, which is his natural foot. And it's one of those ones where live, I thought he's hit it straight at the keeper and it's gone through. But actually, the keeper does well to get a hand on it and goes in. So those passages of play, because he's still very destructive in the middle of the pitch, and you see that towards the end for that Joe Linton chance. But he caused so many issues out wide for Brentford and for a change that created space for other players. So it's really, really positive on that front. Howe's made the right call there. I'm sure if he's, you know, allegedly if he'd spoken to St-Maximin, play me through the middle, I want to play as a striker. Nah, him and Joe Linton either side. This is how well him and Joe Linton played. Ryan Fraser comes on and puts in the ball of the season. He still doesn't start for me next week. That's how well those two played together. We're going to move on now, though, to other positives before we go back to the defence and the kind of issues. I'll go on this one. I just want to talk through generally some of the things that we saw yesterday that I thought were a massive improvement. Just little things, okay? So number one, we played miles higher up the pitch. We played a high defensive line with what you could argue were slow defenders. Now, that created some issues because Brentford were really dangerous in the counter-attack. But what it does do, when you win the ball up, when you press the ball, pressing the ball, by the way, trying to take the ball off the other team, they've got the ball, we want it. But how long has it just been, we'll get the ball back when you get into our final third or our penalty box or if he gives it back?
Yeah.
No, no, we went hunting for that ball yesterday. Playing everyone high up the pitch meant that Joe Linton, when he gets the ball, he's 30 yards from goal in a lot of situations. He's got men ahead of him.
Yeah.
When Callum Wilson's holding the ball up, there's St. Maximin, there's Joe Linton, there's Jonjo, there's Joe Willock, who had a difficult game. We might come on to that later. So loads and loads of positives there. We finished the game strongly. In 2 weeks, the team looked fit. In 2 weeks? How the fuck's that happen? How couldn't the previous lot do that?
I don't think Steve Bruce knows what a bleep test is.
Yeah. It's like, to me, just these little things. And you know, I'd add this from a journalist on Twitter after Bruce was sacked, saying, well, this team won't improve. And maybe this team will go down. I still don't think so. I still retain hope. But we've already seen, it was a 3-3 draw, and there's much to do defensively and possibly team selection-wise to get that balance right. But fucking hell, it was better, wasn't it? It was absolutely unbelievable. And to see a game like that, it was a normal game of football. Yeah, it was chaotic. Yeah, there was end-to-end. And I'm sure it was entertaining for the neutral because we were behind for large parts of it. It was very stressful for me watching it. But, you know, seeing Jonjo Shelvey sprinting about, finishing the game strongly, pushing up the pitch, you know, that 10 minutes when we got the second goal up until half time, it's like the best spell of pressure and best football I've seen in about 10 years. I'm serious. Like, we're all over them. We're all over them. They couldn't cope with it. It's just frustrating that every time we got ourselves in these stronger positions, we kind of shot ourselves in the foot. And we'll come on to that later in the show. Norman, you want to make a point, mate?
You lads, any one of you. So based on yesterday's performance, obviously we saw a lot of attacking intent, really good attacking performance. Performances from Joe Linton and Jonjo Shelvey that maybe a lot of us thought we'd may never see or never see again with regard to Shelvey. I mean, obviously, Joe Linton in his third game away to Spurs was absolutely fantastic, to be honest. And that was reminiscent of that. But I started thinking yesterday, right, my whole idea on signings was we need to get a centre-half, a centre-midfield and a centre-forward. Basically, that's what we need in the window. If I had to make three signings, it would be those, this kind of spine. Watching yesterday, though, I started thinking, actually, do we have enough Gannon forward? And do we just focus on basically getting wide, like a wide player, i.e. a wing-back slash midfielder and a centre-half or even two centre-halves or a defensive midfielder rather than focus on the attacking intent? I know you could argue if Wilson gets injured, we haven't got a centre-forward. We do. We've got Dwight Gayle there. Do any of you think that we could actually get away with kind of leaving the attacking aspect of the game and just bringing in more defensive midfielders instead? Defensive players instead?
I agree to some extent. I just think if Wilson picks up an injury, which if we go off the last couple of years, he inevitably will at some stage. I don't know if Dwight Gayle is reliable of, but then again, if you have players in and around him and he can poach goals in the box, he might nick a couple of goals. It is a good point, but I think defensively it is needing to be looked at the most. I think we need a right fullback like yesterday, a centre back that isn't Kieran Clark, and a centre midfielder that can probably do a bit of everything, because we've needed a midfielder for a while that can defend, go forward, whereas you could probably name one thing that each midfielder could do well that we've got. But in terms of the attacking, if we can keep everybody fit on an attacking front, we could probably just focus on defence. But if Wilson gets injured, I'd severely doubt like Dwight Gayle. But I don't know, everyone's gone new lease of life under Eddie Howe, who knows?
You could argue yesterday Callum Wilson didn't score, he scored three times. So
I thought Wilson had an off day. I don't think he looked particularly sharp off it.
I agree. However, I thought he led the line in terms of us pressing the ball in their half, and there was a number of times where I saw him pressing, but not just pressing on his own like he used to, because he knew no one else was going to do it. But he was dragging people with him, and he was turning as he was running and screaming at Joe Linton to his right to come and press the other centre half, and screaming at Maximan, bringing John Joe and Willock with him. He did a lot of the donkey work yesterday, which I haven't seen too many times from Callum Wilson. So that was really positive. But we have scored three. We've scored three goals in a game without the only person that ever scores for Newcastle United scoring a goal. So there is an argument there, Norman, that you're right. But I think Kyle is right. If Wilson gets an injury, which he might, and if it's a serious one, if he's out for 2-3 months and he misses a couple of the key games that we'll need to get points from, we'll really struggle to score. And that has to be addressed.
Yeah, no, well said, lads. I totally agree with that. I suppose we should finish the show then on the negatives in terms of what we saw at the back yesterday. Mickey, you made an interesting point to me, though. Before we talk about the specifics, or maybe you want to go into the specifics, you thought of Eddie Howe was in the stadium yesterday, Newcastle win that game. It's not an opinion I've seen widely circulated.
Yeah, I do, and it's based on my opinion on the defence, actually, and specifically the personnel that were in there and the way they were set up. So I thought bringing Fabian Schär back into the team was crucial, and I thought he did what he needed to do in terms of being able to hold the ball, to carry the ball, to switch the play, either whether he was going back across the defence or turning out to his right and playing the ball into the right fullback or the centre forward. Thought he did that really well. He had an excellent shot yesterday. I don't know if he's noticed because it got blocked quite early, but I was right behind it from the corner. It was going in. I promise you it was going in. Did really well at that. However, Ivan Toney just had his pants down every time the ball was in the air, and Fabian Schär was really poor against him. He was constantly a yard or two away. He was never challenging the ball. He was never making it difficult for Toney when the ball was coming in the air. How many times did we see Toney yesterday get the ball into his chest and just feed it off to someone that was running past?
I wanted to make a point about this, and no one wants to make a point about Toney. What I thought we really missed yesterday, and this brings up, I want to come back to your point about how, because that's what we're talking about, but the fact that, I could say Joe Willock, Jacob Murphy and Matt Ritchie had bad games, okay? But I think they've been selected to play our most attacking team. And all of the good things that we saw, if I want to try and be fair to those lads and think, yes, if you're playing, you know, if you're playing wing back, if that's what we're going to call it, you have defensive responsibilities. You can say two goals, definitely two goals, Murphy. Ritchie for not stopping that cross. You know, their lad can put the ball left or right on Ritchie and it's going in. Ritchie just knows he's not going to stop the cross. So Maximan got very frustrated with Ritchie a lot yesterday. I think that's a conversation for a different podcast on Patreon, maybe. But this was us going all out attack. What Brentford did very well is realised with Shelvey and Willock as a midfield two, they could play between the lines so easily. So what Tony's strike partner did at the start, and then Toney started doing it, was leaving the back three, knowing that Willock and Shelvey, even if they want to get the ball off him, he can bring the ball down his chest. And fair play to Brentford's goalkeeper, who was dropping it on a sixpence piece each time for Toney to come deep. We didn't have an answer to that yesterday. This is to bring it back to your point. Are you saying that if Howe was there, I mean, by the way, Howe was watching the game and speaking on the phone or whatever to the coaching staff, signal sighting St James's Park, I hope they could hear him okay. But are you saying that like those things that Brentford managed to notice about our way of play and managed to adapt to, if Howe had been there, we could have counter-adapted?
Yeah, I am. And there's a difference between talking to someone on the phone and being there and seeing it with your own eyes. I thought Brentford did exactly what you've said really well, but Toney, for me, clearly targeted Fabian Schär because he's physically the weakest defender. And if he was doing that against the cells would be in the back of him. It's just such a kind of fundamental thing about defending that Schär doesn't quite have, and that's why he's not a top quality defender. But Howe would have noticed that. What needed to happen for me in that, if you're going to pick those three players, which he has, and I know it makes sense to have Lascelles at the heart of the defence because he's the organiser, but I bring Schär into the middle. So then Toney, whether he goes left or right, he can either be followed by Clark, who's going to...
Lascelles famously had a massive hoof when Rafa tried to play him on the right side.
Well, I know, but like, what's he going to do? Say, I'm not going to play. Like, bring Fernandes in, which is what should have happened anyway. Like, and then you've got the two side defenders, centre-halves, that can follow that. And when you've got three at the back, and I know it's a very attacking 3-5-3, when you've got three at the back,
players.
One of 3-5, yeah. What am I even trying to say?
3-4-3.
3-4-3, yeah. One of those centre halves can follow into that gap as long as the other two are organised, and that could have happened. And
do you not think that if he picks Isaac Hayden, this issue isn't there?
Yeah, but then we don't have the same impetus going forward.
That's correct.
Yeah. So, and the other reason why I think I wanted to talk about the defence and talk about that structure and the way those three play is really you want your best ball player there in the middle, because he can bring it out through the middle and look to either side, where when you've got Shaw on the right, excellent on the ball, can make those run moves forward and those passes forward, class at it. LaSalle's kind of doing it all. Obviously, he's terrible on the ball. But so is Clark, and Clark doesn't offer that same balance to the left. So we were constantly, when we were bringing the ball out of defence effectively, it always had to be on the right because Clark just can't do it. And you could see it over and over again with Clark's passing into Richie. It was always 1 yard behind where it needed to be rather than the yard in front, so Richie can move onto the ball. I thought that had a massive detrimental effect on the team. And that'll come, by the way, in the January transfer window, as Norman said, we will bring in players that can play in those positions to fit the system, and we don't quite have it yet. I think Howe, if he's in the stadium, notices that and makes the change.
You want to make a point about Ivan Toney?
I have to quickly just mention the centre midfield. I think absolutely spot on the attacking tempo. What it shows is, and we mentioned it earlier on in the show, is that we need that midfielder, right, who can basically do both things, i.e. can defend, can sort of close down space, can defend, can put tackles in, but can also get forward and create. And I know they're a rarity, but ultimately, if this is about avoiding relegation, it's one of those things you think it's going to be huge, this player. We're going to have to spend a lot of money. Just put in 100 million for Declan Rice. Get him in. Get Declan Rice in. That's not fantastical, is it? But Ivan Toney, it's interesting. I found his celebration interesting because he celebrated it as if he had proven something to Newcastle United Football Club and its fans. It's like, no, mate, anybody cared? Like, when you got sold? We never saw you play.
He got booed a lot, Norman.
I don't know if you noticed that from the stream, but he got booed a lot by the Gallagher, and I didn't understand it, actually.
Oh, did he? That's really interesting, because I thought myself, well, actually, he barely played. So it's interesting that he got booed. So fair play to him. I take everything back that I've said. He deserved his goal, and he milked it the way he should have done. But no, the people who sold him aren't even at the club anymore. I found it interesting, but now you've mentioned the booing, I mean, just delete this point completely, please.
Never. We'll never silence you, Norman. Lance, is there anyone who wants to make any points about the defence and things that we've not said?
Yeah, I do. I think Toney didn't just have Shaw and Toast. I thought he had all three of them, to be honest. There was times where, when you've looked back over the years, you could probably say Clark and Lascelles, two physical centre-backs, and they don't get pushed around, they don't get bullied. They get bullied every week now. Lascelles gets bullied physically so much, yet when we were touting him for England in 2018, there wasn't a striker in the league that could push him off the ball. Now he just gets pushed off the ball like so easily. And Clark gets caught out of position so much. And Mbembo, I think it is, and Toney, they had an absolute field day, because the movement, the ability, the physicality. And I think even earlier in the season, I think Mikel Antonio for West Ham had an absolute field day, because he's a physical presence and he's quick, and Tony's got that physical presence about him as well. And our defence just isn't up to scratch. Like, Shea had a good game yesterday and it was right that he was in the team, but I think, to touch on what Norman said earlier on, I think defensive reinforcements is an absolute must in January, because physically, defensively, it's absolutely abysmal. It's true to Newcastle form. We had a good couple of years under Benitez defensively, but it's typical Newcastle defensively. Shocking.
Totally agree. For me, I'd change both fullbacks for Arsenal. Like I said, St. Maximin was getting more and more frustrated with Richie yesterday, whether he wants the ball quicker. And Richie did start to play the ball more quickly. But Richie, this is a question for how to address, is that Richie in attacking situations always wants his teammates to engineer a position for him to cross the ball. St. Maximin's trying to engineer a position where he gets the ball in the box to get a shot off or across the face. Or pulled back. So you've got your left back and your left sided of the front three there with completely different competing ideas. And I'm sure that can be sorted out. But if you're Matt Ritchie and you're not crossing the ball, you're almost not supposed to be in the team. So that's an issue that I saw yesterday. Murphy, very bad defensively, but, you know, can get up and down quickly. Maybe it's the athleticism point that Howe and Tindall are looking at and thinking, we need this team to be getting up and down the pitch more quickly. move the ball quicker. I often worry about just Murphy's like touch. It's just not good enough. It's not quite Premier League level. Like you said earlier, Kyle, he can whip a good ball in. If he plays the remaining 27 games or whatever we've got left, 25, 26 games left, he probably will get 5 assists that Mankiw wouldn't get. So it's a real interesting one. I think we'll leave it there, lads. It's been a pleasure to speak to you all. Thanks to everyone who listens to the show. Really appreciate it. Like we said, we are on Patreon, £5.50 a month. Give us a shot on that if you like what you hear. Norman's down in Arsenal next week. We'll be back with the free podcast. What will it be? Next Sunday, this time next week, with Norman and a couple of others. We've also got Warren Barton joining us next week on our Pro View show. He joins Keith Gillespie on Patreon as a regular contributor to the True Faith Patreon podcast. So I'll stop talking. Thanks to you, lads. Thanks for listening. Speak to you all very soon. Cheers.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.